Hello, and thank you for tuning in to A Feminist Perspective. This weekly radio broadcast is sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, a program and information service of the Dean of Women's Office, 220 Strong Hall. Also located in this center is a large lending library. This library contains vast amounts of information, news clippings, government documents, magazine articles, research studies, and books pertaining to the many aspects of the women's movement. We want to invite you to come in and browse or take advantage of the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, 220 Strong Hall at the University of Kansas. The materials in this center are as valuable for men as for women, since sex role definitions and stereotypes affect both sexes. The subject matter for tonight's program is secretaries. Our guests for tonight's program are Vicki Hamer, Research Assistant for the Office of Affirmative Action for Women, who has been a secretary in offices at KU and is also working on a master's in speech communication. Diane Wagner, who has just resigned her position, is working in the Dean of Men's office to concentrate on work on her master's program in early childhood education. Susan Kessler is a secretary in the School of Social Welfare. And Edith Black, who is an administrative assistant in the School of Social Welfare, and whose responsibility is partly involved in supervision of their secretaries. I am Judy Haddad, Assistant Dean of Women and moderator for tonight's program. We felt a little at a loss as to how we were going to start topic on secretaries, since a lot of people might ask themselves, what do secretaries have to talk about or complain about, or why would women be interested in the topic of secretaries? The first answer that would come to mind is that most women are secretaries, most secretaries are women, excuse me. So we thought that we had a lot to talk about. We have an article that is entitled Fed Up, Secretaries and Academia. And since primarily this is where we all work, I thought we should start here. This article was written in 1971 by Minnie Twiffle and Ellen Birdseye, who work as secretaries at the University of California, Berkeley. And they have said in their article, "The women in our office have consciously tried to achieve workers' control, and we've tried to wage that struggle collectively. After each small gain from collective action or resistance, the basic structure of the situation always closed suffocatingly around us. We found out that behind the easy friendliness between faculty and secretaries existed a master-servant relationship. We found out there was no way to institutionalize change within a structure where we had no decision-making power. We found within ourselves an anger that we'd anesthetized ourselves to in other more oppressive offices." And so maybe we can just start off with the idea of a master-servant relationship in any office. Do you have any particular feelings about that? How about the informality-formality problem? Maybe boss calling you Diane, Vicki, Susan, and yet you having to address the boss as the master type thing. Yes, yes.
The change thing is what struck me first, is that I do believe, and I had thought about it, an office setup cannot be changed. As you grow and expand as a person, there is nothing that you can do except to leave. You can't raise your position. There is this, you are the secretary, you will always remain the secretary. There's nowhere to go except out. Perhaps some of the other of you feel that way in your past experience.
Yeah, I felt that way. At least I feel like I've been in some situations where, or in one situation specifically, where I got to know the details and procedure of a certain aspect of the workings of the office quite well. And yet I felt that my opinions about what happened in that particular area were treated as very unimportant and insignificant. I was never asked, but sometimes I offered my opinion anyway. And I got the I remember one time specifically where I was patted on the shoulder by the boss and told it was not my duty to think. I was just to do what I was told.
Yeah, that's that ours is not to reason why.
Right.
Thing. And I think that's becoming more and more apparent to a lot of people just in the world around us. We don't respond or react to almost anything. We become very apathetical because we have no effect on it. And which is another point that off the subject of the article, but one that I very strongly wanted to bring up was the secretary's self-concept. I noted an article in the Sunday paper that said that people believe they're paid enough for their work. And I feel like that's a reflection of their self-confidence. They feel like they are being paid what they are worthy of, and they are worthy of a very, very small amount. Mm-hmm. And I find this has been a problem in the past for me as a secretary, is that my self-confidence goes down because every time I see my paycheck, I know that I'm not a really demanded person. How do you feel like in a position that you're in, being an administrator? Do you feel like...
Well, first of all, you said there's no place to go. That's very true. You don't just feel that way. That's true. There is nowhere to go. At the office setups as they are, particularly at KU, and that's all I know about, is that budgets and organization charts are based on what we call unclassified positions, which are faculty usually, or research people. And then the classified staff, which are clerical, and usually those are minimum either clerk stenos or clerk typists. And it is true, if you grow beyond that, and many people do, the only place is to be promoted into a different position someplace else who have a position that requires more experience. I don't know about the pay business. To me, self-concept is an extremely important thing for women to become aware of their worth and not be satisfied with a position that doesn't pay or doesn't require the abilities. But just my own experience looking for a job in Lawrence, Kansas, the civil service going.
I think Edith was talking about pay.
Yeah, and it's much more important than weather. But I think it's probably a larger issue than just secretaries as opposed to not being a secretary. I think it's a whole issue of women's salaries, period, and the opportunities open for women. In Lawrence, Kansas, a job of a secretary at the University of Kansas is probably as good a paying job as many people can find.
Mm-hmm. I will second that. Mm-hmm. Having worked in Lawrence, not at the university, the university pays very well compared to others. The university also has insurance, added benefits that others don't have. So there, I believe you're right. It is really...
I thought it was interesting they had an ad in the classified section of the newspaper wanting a maintenance man for the university. The salary was $600 a month, and all that was required educationally was 8th grade education. Secretaries start here from around 370, 380.
370, right.
So that's interesting to know what you can do with an 8th grade mm-hmm. education.
That's for sure, isn't it?
Did you apply for that job?
No.
Yeah, that would have been a good experience. Somebody, right. You know, who would have that kind of talent, I don't know, whatever, but you know, to apply for that job.
Well, see, you certainly have the qualifications.
Yes. Edith, do you feel like a secretary could possibly be promoted into a higher position after she has proven herself? Like, personally, I have felt that I was most capable as far as handling the responsibility and knowing the job, but that I could never, ever be in a different position other than secretary. Even if you had taken on the responsibility, they'd be foolish to put you in a position that paid more, was less hours for doing the same thing that you were already doing, plus your added jobs. Do you feel like this?
I think that that might be the case in some offices. Maybe in the office you were, there was a position or a thing that you thought you qualified for. In our particular office, there is a big division. There's either one thing or the other. And there would be no place, really, unless we completely reorganized, and that would take such a exercise of paperwork to get it approved. You know, it's something I wouldn't even hardly know where how to start. But in your office, you may have seen a position that you were qualified for, but that you wouldn't be considered for. And if that's the case, that's most unfortunate. And if that is the case, then I think some kind of loud voices need to be, or loud, or some kind of strong pushing that, you know, opens that kind of thing up and doesn't let it to go on.
I think that isn't usually the case, though. I think not only is there lack of room for change and growth in the offices, it seems to be also within the state in order to get any kind of position. And most offices, as you said, I don't believe have positions.
No.
There's a problem about speaking out in that you have a boss, usually, and a secretary. And the secretary is really putting her job on the line. Oftentimes, she may feel that way anyway, if she continues to make complaints about small things that are big to her but may seem insignificant to her supervisor in some way. And that the problem in many small offices where there might be just a secretary is that she really does have to have the support of others around her, and that instead of competing with each other, one secretary against the other, to look better than the others or type faster or this sort of thing, that they really have to support each other, maybe organize in some way, be aware of the fact that the Labor Relations Board would be helpful to her if she were fired for making some human demands.
I know a situation where that's happened.
Do you?
Where a woman in a secretarial position passed a petition around amongst her fellow workers and to present some kind of complaint, I think, to their bosses, and they fired her. She eventually sued them and won the suit because she was fired.
But that, no matter how you look at it, if even winning the suit, she has really lost the job. I found that you can make yourself, something like this, you make yourself uncomfortable and your boss uncomfortable. Perhaps it's not your immediate boss that imposes these rules and regulations. Perhaps it's partly tradition. He understands your feelings. He's empathetic with you. His hands are somewhat tied. All you do is just make your life extremely miserable. And I think, you know, if you do want to be the sacrificial goat type of thing, of take it to court, fine, but not to go back to the position. And I think that is where the secretary knows, a person knows you can't go back. And so you have to stand up. And a lot of people, secretaries, especially at KU, seem to be putting their husbands through.
Right.
Susan can
very well
Susan,
right.
Yes,
I'm a veteran.
You don't have a choice. Yeah. You cannot risk the money for the tuition.
To prevent it from becoming too glum a situation, I think that the times are changing a little bit, in that I think that many employers will be less likely to fire a person now because they make complaints, because there are many more legal protections that have come up in just the last year and a half or so. I think the affirmative action programs, the labor relations boards, there are a lot of different aisles that a person can, a lot of different places that a person can turn. And I think that most of the employers know about those and will be less likely to take such drastic action.
One thing I'd like to say is that I personally feel like the secretary somewhat sets the pace in some offices. Now, if she goes in and as the, may I get you your coffee and dust your office and pick up everything for you immediately, then it's going to be expected. Now, not always does she have this option, but if she goes in and says, fine, we both can walk, so we both can get our own coffee. I have to dust my office. I'll be glad to wash, you know, or hand you the rag when I'm through. That is something that she can pretty well establish herself at first. And going back to this, it's hard to change. I believe it really is hard to change. I believe that that's something she ought to be aware of on the very beginning.
The first day she walks in the door.
Or it should be covered in an interview. If she feels strongly about it, an interview is not, it's an evaluation on both parties. And she owes herself the time spent in asking him am I making the coffee every morning?
Mm-hmm. One thing, since the listening audience can't see us, I may just comment that I am a more mature type person than the other four people around this table. And so I must comment about that business of waiting on people and say, no, I agree with that, except that I must tell you that I sometimes enjoy waiting on other people. At the same time, I enjoy the reciprocating, being waited on.
Right.
And it seems to me that's the kind of relationship I, at my age, like to establish. Mm-hmm. I do wait on people, and I don't think anything about it. I enjoy it. I mean, really. But I also sometimes, you know, kind of mm-hmm.
Can we
back.
Put that in the yeah. category of courtesy, though? I think the fact
yeah.
that it's being courteous
exactly.
to people.
Understanding
exactly.
and
right.
relating to
there's
one
another. There's a difference. We want to make them feel comfortable, so we will offer them a cup
or
of coffee.
Or it's a special occasion. Now, I feel the same way you do. I've been around for quite a while, even though I don't look like it, and I believe that
you're
is common.
Age,
though we never knew you were 50. I believe that's common courtesy. If someone has a bad day, or if someone's in a rush, but it shouldn't be something that's taken for granted, you can get reprimanded for.
Oh,
anything
right.
along that
that's
line.
Kind of a servant
yeah.
kind
right.
of.
Okay, right. I agree with you 100%. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your getting your employer a cup of coffee if sometimes it's not below him to get you one or bring you one to a meeting mm-hmm. sometime. It's just that reciprocal courtesy that's absolutely
well, if
necessary.
If you've had a lot of typing and haven't had much time to leave the desk mm-hmm. or to take your coffee break, if that be the case.
But you know what? You can foster that kind of relationship. And it may take reminders. But, you know, once more say, you know, it's time you brought me a cup of coffee. Or, you know, some kind of remarks like that that says, hey, wait a minute.
I wonder how I wonder how many secretaries think of it.
Well,
I wonder how many secretaries feel that the maid servant role is part of their secretarial role. I had a job once where, now I'm going to tell you, this is an experience, where the employer was doing absolutely nothing but standing in the doorway. And he says, by the way, Vicki, my desk needs to be dusted. I probably told him that I wasn't going to dust his desk. Well, I don't know if I didn't tell him. I just didn't do it. I just didn't do it. And he was always asking me to run little errands for him and not reciprocating. It was completely a master-servant role.
We really don't have too much of that in the fact that we don't have so much of a one-to-one relationship. Mm-hmm. We are working for you're, say, assigned three or four faculty to work for, but yet whatever needs to be done, you do. Mm-hmm. So we have really gotten away from that traditional boss-secretary relationship. There's really not too much.
Well, I'll bet that's the supervisor, mm-hmm. because I was in a relationship like that once also, and that was due to the supervisor flat out stating, this is the way it is. No one tells my secretary under me to do his first, you know, like I've set it up. You have a complaint, you come to me. Mm-hmm. And it's a protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it works out. You know, back to your article you read first.
Wanted to read this continued thing about that, since we're talking about tasks. From the article, Fed Up, secretarial work can be divided roughly into two categories. Tasks that save time for the master and tasks that bolster the prestige of the master and maintain status boundaries between master and servant. And this goes on to describe, for example, a secretary dialing a phone number for the boss when the boss is just sitting with his hands folded and can easily do that. Running off a copy of something off the copying machine when all it takes is pushing the button and the boss could also do that. These are things that bolster the master-servant thing and that many bosses really need for that ego boost.
That's fantastic. Somebody, was it you who told me the story about the, I don't remember who it was, but nothing pees me more than to have an employer say, call up so-and-so in Kansas City. And while you dial the phone and go through all of the operators and go through the secretary at the other end, he's lighting up a cigarette, leaning back in his chair. And then when you finally get the party on the line, he says, hello, Joe, you old so-and-so. And you have to say, sorry, I'll have to put you through to him. It's so ridiculous. Here you tie up five or six people when you only need two.
What's worse is when they've gone to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I got your party on the other end. And
can they disappear?
Would you please hold?
The thing you read, though, what kind of bothered me was you said in an atmosphere of seeming informality of relationships between secretary that there still was the formal servant.
In this particular instance, you see, the secretaries had won some small battles, you know, and they make a distinction between the conservative master and the liberal master, but they are still masters, and their liberal masters, you know, allow them to do certain things, like wear slacks in the office when they're confined to a small area and have to do bending and so on. So it's supposed to be a concession that they could wear slacks in the office.
Well, it made me think about kind of my attitude in our office, that the secretarial skill and her supportive services are just as important as perhaps the intellect that requires the creativity of the manuscript or something like that. And that we, you know, one is just as important with the other. The loss of one means the job doesn't get done. And some of our faculty, I think we kind of have that, or at least I feel like we sort of have that atmosphere. And yet maybe underlying it, that's just a sort of a facade, and that really it is a... Susan could speak maybe better about that.
One example is, traditionally we had called them professor, doctor, whatever. Mm-hmm. Collectively, as a whole, the office staff decided we would go to a first name basis, since they'd always called us by our first names. Several months ago, we just decided this is it. We'll call them Brad, Don, whatever. And it's carried off very well, and the funny thing is they haven't even noticed.
Well, I would give you the reverse of that. This really happened. I was working in one of the professional schools, and the secretaries and the faculty and the students were on a very informal basis, and we called everybody, practically everybody, except maybe some of the venerables, you know, who were around, by first name, and it was just very nice. And there came a change in the office, and it was a change in the position of one person, and we were told that from now on we would refer to the faculty by their title.
I just can't imagine that happening.
It happened.
How long ago? Because I think, you know,
it must have happened a year and a half ago.
Well,
we decided if students could call the professors by their first name, we certainly should be able to, as we had a much closer relationship with them.
And I suspect you said that they didn't notice. It was a natural thing to do.
Had,
and the other
several
was probably
had been asking us,
unnatural.
Please call me, you know, by my first name.
Well, that's the way the situation was there.
I've always heard that you can call them, or the understanding, impression I've been, is you can call them by their first name when no one's around. The minute someone comes in the door, be it a student, just a plain outsider is what it amounts to, then it is by their title.
It's more a formal thing because
it's
of the...
formal, right.
I don't understand
that
at all.
Back and forth.
Well, wouldn't that just be because within the office you may have informal relations with each other since you work together all day, every day. However, when outsiders come in, there should be more of a professional attitude.
I quite honestly don't see what the business of names has to do with how professional your office is. I mean, if you're slapping somebody on the back and laughing hysterically about a joke, that may be something else. If you're introducing someone, you know, that's different too. But I just can't see that. It seems phony to me to do that kind of thing.
One thing before we begin all looking like we're poor persecuted pearls, I feel like the secretary, a lot of secretaries bring things like this on themselves because like a move to a higher position or something like that, a lot of people, especially it seems like at KU, have the reputation of secretaries not taking on the responsibility, they just want their paycheck, they are not willing to pull their end of the load at all, they refuse to accept any kind of learning. They will consistently, you know, month after month, do something wrong. And so I feel like both sides of the coin have to be looked at here. You can see some offices, some of the deans, the men in the offices, feeling the way they do about secretaries. When the turnover, I'm sure KU should have a very high turnover.
Well, that's one thing. We don't and have not had high turnover in our office. I would say probably we have probably the, well, I have no idea, but our people, numbers of them have been there over a period of time. So I suppose some offices do have
I guess that indicates that everyone is fairly satisfied, or they would look for a
I don't know that necessarily that's true.
Well, yeah, availability of other jobs to go to.
Part of it's completely unbearable. You can always find something.
The listening audience doesn't know that the two people who just spoke there are the same office.
Well, let's take a short station break. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. We want to invite you to call in if you have any questions or responses to anything we're saying. The number is 864-4530. Our topic for this evening is secretaries. Our guests are Vicki Hamer, Diane Wagner, Susan Kessler, Edith Black, and myself, Judy Haddad. Okay, I have an interesting quotation that I'd like to read again from the article Fed Up, Secretaries in Academia. A secretary is not evaluated by the amount or quality of the work she does so much as by her ability to look respectful, bland, and moderately busy at all times. I would like to comment on the secretary that we had last year who has moved on. Her husband finished law school, and she was just a real super organized secretary, and by the end of the day she had plenty of time to read the newspaper or work on needlepoint and this sort of thing. And I must admit that when I first came to KU and saw this, I really thought, you know, what is she doing, spending all that time working on her own things? But the fact that she had completed the work and done it well, I think said a lot more for her than for me. And I think I finally adjusted to that. The fact that she hadn't stretched out her work to take up the full day, but that she could get it organized enough and have it done so that she had enough time for a few other things.
Along the line of look respectable, I worked one place that I felt very, very strongly. It was a private enterprise, and it that we were hired on looks. The only people who were not what I would consider above average looking girls were in the mailroom, which was in the basement, and nobody could get to them, so no one could see them. And I feel like that is most definitely, you can walk in and interview for a job, and if you are dressed and look really shabby, I'll bet you're not get the job no matter what your qualifications are. If you walk in or dress nicely, have your hair nice and have your makeup on, you will get the job if you look really good and you have halfway, maybe not even halfway, qualifications. I don't know if anyone else has felt that kind of discrimination or if it just happened to be this one particular place.
Well, I felt lots of times like I was being considered part of the furnishings in the office. I think that I can't ever remember having a problem. I just didn't ask about whether or not I could wear slacks, because in the wintertime it's awfully cold up here on this hill, and I just started wearing them.
I think that there's a difference that in people who wrote the article are in Berkeley, where the weather's fairly temperate all year, and the fact that we do live in a winter climate.
Really, but I think that the whole clothes issue, wherever it's discussed, is pretty indicative of one of the major attitudes that people hold about secretaries. I mean, their role as part of the decoration in the office is very important.
Except that's also like in our office,
that would be
people could
the
not,
dean of men's office.
Right. The assistants and no one dressed could dress very informally. It was not just the secretaries, but the dress code. There was, you know, to look nice and presentable.
But that was all the statement was, to be presentable and
no,
not be distracting
really no
in any
statement.
Way. Isn't that, wouldn't that be the main
There was no statement, but I never observed anyone come to work looking extremely shabby. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's true in other offices. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, what's expected of the bosses are also, I suppose, expected of the secretaries.
That's strange.
That's still an equality kind of thing, though. Would you expect? Is that what you're saying? I think that's what I hear you saying.
I'm saying it's not just a one-way coin. It goes both ways.
Yeah, I hear you saying that the executive or the higher-ranking people are required to be coat and tie, and the secretaries are too. Now, to me, if it was the reverse were true, if the, say in our situation, the faculty could come in old jeans and a sloppy shirt, and yet they would downgrade the secretary for perhaps wearing, you know, informal things and clogs and stuff.
I think that,
you know, then I think that would be what I would object to.
Right.
But if everybody in that office, the appearance is supposed to be Mr. Clean and straight and Mrs. Straight and all those things, then I don't see
that. That's one point I'd like to, Mrs. Straight, Mr. Straight. Name tags. My personal opinion about name tags is that no one really cares who you are. If they care, they're going to find out what your name is, no matter what you do to try to prevent them from finding out your name.
Some offices have name tags?
Most offices, I believe, do. I refuse to have
an actual shirt
on the desk.
On your desk, so that someone comes in and they say, well, and then, first of all, we try for the Miss Diana Wagner. Mm-hmm. And then we say, scratch the Miss. There's going to be nothing there. And I don't feel that there should be a name tag. Because I honestly feel like if you are maybe an executive secretary or someone like this, if your name is needs to be up so that you will take the person in and you will say, this is Mr. So-and-so, I'm sure he can help you, and they forget that person's name, I can see a use for the name to be right there. But when, in talking to the secretary, the basis is not as such that I feel like a name is needed. And I really...
Would you rather be anonymous?
I certainly would, because I feel like there's no reason to have the name there. I extremely dislike at having someone, in my opinion, take liberties with my name.
Well, the liberty would be taken if you were forced to have a name tag. I've seen girls who really liked to have the name tag and thought that brought some prestige to her desk.
I can
by
see
having one
yeah.
there.
I can
and
see.
So I think it's a difference of opinion, perhaps.
Right, pros and cons in that situation. The thing I guess that bugs me is the lack of respect that might be involved when some stranger comes into the office and immediately starts referring to you by your first name.
Right, and puts his hand on your shoulder like I've had this happen before, but I feel like taking liberties with my name. If my name had not been there and I was a nameless person, people tend to be a little bit more formal.
Well, I would think then, if you didn't want a name tag on your desk, you would say, you know, I object to this name tag on my desk, and it would go in the drawer, and it would not be on your desk.
But it should never have been made in the first place.
I don't know that I would have even thought that would be objectionable, not having been in that situation.
And maybe the employer just didn't see it that way, too, and only needed a reminder of how somebody else views that. Mm-hmm. To me, again, it's the openness that people have to establish. And maybe that's a myth, and maybe you never achieve it, but I continue to say we've got to
maybe there's an ideal situation of openness, Edith.
Oh, no.
I think what I'm saying is I think that openness in the secretarial employer relationship
will never
certainly
happen.
I'm saying that it would be good if more of it could develop, because I think maybe some of the problems that exist could be dealt with just an open discussion. Hmm. Others of them are much more ingrained.
I think too that much of the impetus for that has to come from the employer boss.
Uh-huh. I think the reverse. I think the secretary who is straightforward, who does not sit there and quietly complain to her coworkers or go home and just, you know, a half an hour on her husband about what happened and how upset she is and how very low she feels and unworthy and everything. She needs to take it upon herself to say, I'm upset, and this is the reason I'm upset.
Go ahead. Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think that it's a two-way road. That the employer has to become more aware of the human feelings in the staff, and the staff has, well, I think that there needs to be a lot of consciousness raising among secretaries, because something that you brought up at the beginning of the program about self-concept and about self-worthiness, I think that there are a lot of secretaries who wouldn't conceive of complaining to their boss.
I agree.
Just wouldn't conceive
right.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the situation she's in. It's the way she considers her position and the manner in which other people consider her position. And if someone doesn't consider it to be that important, she doesn't feel that important. And as a result, she doesn't feel like she has a right to impose her little emotional feelings on a boss.
I have a sister who's been the secretary for better than 10 years, probably, and is an excellent secretary. And when she was looking for a job, was told that she was overqualified. She was too good a secretary for many places. Her worth as such then probably would be more than mm-hmm. somebody else with mm-hmm. less experience.
Yeah.
And so the value that they would put on her abilities would be more as far as money is concerned. So she looked a long time. Is what the
You're overqualified.
We've kind of touched on something that that I'd like to bring out a little bit more, and that is the matter of sexuality in an office. One of you talked about being part of the furniture, you know, working in an office downtown, about the good-looking ones getting the front office desks and the other ones being in the mail room. And then another thing that brought it to mind was the stranger who walked in the office and put his hand on your shoulder and became very familiar because he knew your name. I wonder if the matter of sexuality becomes a problem in an office, since most secretaries are women, and many of the faculty and administrators on campus are men.
I've been very much aware of those undertones. Well, in one situation where I worked, in other situations it hasn't been there at all. In one situation, though, you get the stereotype of the boss chasing the secretary around the desk. Well, I feel like I've been in that situation, and it's no fun, really, to every day have to say bug off.
Mm-hmm. I worked for a large company, and it was a company rule that bosses had to leave their door open at least 2 inches when they were dictating to their secretaries. Mm-hmm. Under no circumstances could the door be completely closed.
It had been a problem there.
That had been a company rule since the day it was founded, I believe.
Oh.
Conservative.
Yes. Very conservative.
I don't know. I think that in a lot of times that that's a problem.
How about dealing with male students?
I personally didn't feel like it was a problem. Maybe I'm kind of cold, but I think that people just kind of got the idea. Very few times did they become extremely familiar, what I would feel uncomfortable. And the people that did so, it was more like a personality trait. They did it with everyone, every woman, you know. So
there's a difference, too, because every time I've been a secretary, I've also been primarily a student, and I've been employed as a student secretary. And there's a difference between your peer group relationships. Like Diana, I don't remember ever being accosted by a student, you know, except maybe verbally.
It's just the supervisor.
It was just the difference in the situation, because. Well, you feel freer with a student, and you can say things to them that maybe you couldn't say to your boss. Mm-hmm. I can get the message across more effectively.
Be a little more honest in your right. response, I think is what you... Yeah. We've also touched on another subject that was brought up by almost every secretary that I've talked to, and several of these other women have, and that was a matter of making coffee and dusting and being a housewife in the office kind of thing. Several of you have mentioned it to me. Why don't you go ahead and say what you would like about that?
Well, I questioned some secretary friends about how they felt about anything that they felt important, and I was told most definitely to strongly emphasize women secretaries / in between are not coffee makers, and that men can make coffee just as well. I personally make the worst coffee in the world. When I make coffee, I have to read a chart and measured exactly, and then it doesn't come out right, I am sure that the men of the office could have made the coffee better than me. And I honestly feel that very strongly that I personally don't care for that, being the housewife of the office, picking up after, now, that's okay.
Running errands for your boss. On the coffee thing, I was in a situation once. I don't drink coffee personally, but I usually ended up making it because I was the
first. I think we took a vote, and none of the secretaries here coffee, right?
I do.
Diana does.
Well, anyway, I ended up making it, and I learned how to make coffee in one of the big, huge coffee. I can't make coffee for two or three people. It's just for 30. But anyway, one morning, I hadn't had time to make the coffee, and the boss came in early. And he immediately complained because the coffee wasn't made. Okay. That upset me in the beginning because I was busy and he wasn't doing anything. He could have made it himself. But I went and made the coffee. And it perked and got all ready. And he drew out a cup of it and immediately exclaimed about how awful it tasted. And that, well, I just told him that from now on he could make his own coffee. And I refused to make it after that. I'd quit not long after that.
Under severe pressure.
There was no pressure. I was never asked to make coffee again, but I refused to make it.
I think sometimes secretaries, in a way, ask for it by not flat out saying, I refuse to make the coffee. Now, if they are hiring a coffee maker and a duster, then that's fine. Both of you know at the very beginning that
should that be in the job description?
I feel like it should. If you can't type or if you can't do work correctly, but you have a great smile and you look good and you make darn good coffee and you can chug up and down the aisle getting it for everyone, then that's, you're fulfilling your duties. But you should know ahead of time that those are your duties.
And you should not be penalized if you don't do them. I feel like that. The business of dusting furniture and running errands and coffee making are not part of the job description. They're not part of the qualifications for a job, but I think most secretaries go in expecting to do that. And if they don't do it, the employer is not only surprised, but chances are he'll really give her a hard time for not doing it.
Another point.
And will she eventually give in? Do you think many of them do?
I don't know. I just
for the sake of argument, okay, if he's going to complain about this every day, I just assume. Do it instead of listen to that.
Yeah. I think lots of times the women don't complain. They just expect it to be part of their job and do it.
Okay, so you're not going to drink coffee and you don't want it. And you tell your fellow that you work for that you don't care to make coffee. I think that's fine. I think you should do that. But maybe you like coffee and you like to have a coffee pot around. Are you advocating then that everybody has a separate pot on every desk and you individually go your own coffee pot? I mean, it seems to me some way we're all human beings, male, female, one status or the other, and we ought to be able to resolve or to work out some kind of procedure to have a coffee pot in the house.
It's not that difficult a problem. The problem is prestige. The problem is this is below my station. That kind of thing. Okay? It's very simple. You've got 5 people in the office. Okay?
Oh. Shoot.
Where did he cut us?
We've got 5 people in the office. On Monday, one person makes the coffee. On Tuesday, the next person. It's very simple. You just make up a little chart and say Monday's your day and Tuesday's the boss's day.
But what if the coffee maker doesn't have till 10 o'clock class and he comes in at 10? Mm-hmm. What about the people who want coffee at 8:30?
Yeah.
We've gone up and down the coffee route and we've always come back to the same spot.
Who, the secretary?
Always do it. All right, but... Well, I'll say that, but then the secretary, like, I object to the secretary being totally in charge of it as far as being the one to hassle for money. Mm-hmm. I have been in the position of not making coffee because I had spent the money out of my own pocket for so long, I decided, boy, that's it. I'm not buying another pound of coffee for this office until someone forks over when their salaries are, you know, fantastic, and yours are what they are. Another thing is having to practically get down on your hands and knees and say, please bring the coffee, we're almost out, and then getting some kind of nasty reply of, I just brought coffee not too long ago.
Well, the descriptions that you're saying there and what Vicki have said to me are intolerable for whether you're male, female, or what else. And I just...
I agree. I don't care. I don't care what the problems are as far as time, people get into the office. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of the employers don't come in until 9:30, right? You're there at 8 o'clock. And what if you want a cup of coffee right after you get to work? Well, yeah, I don't care what the problems are. They can be worked out so that at least that there's some kind of dignity involved.
But the opportunity to work them out.
Yeah, the opportunity to work them out is absolutely necessary.
Just the discussion of it.
But I don't know, the discussion of it isn't enough if after the discussion's over, you get right back to the secretaries making the coffee again. Yeah, we'll listen to your problems. We still expect you to make the coffee.
If you've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, that's logical. The secretary is there at 8. The first other member of the office is there at 9:30. The secretary cannot survive until 9:30 without her coffee. Then it is logical.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps maybe switching off between secretaries so that one secretary
right.
didn't have
the coffee. Or maybe at the end of the day having the boss clean out
the pot.
The problem is they're not there at 5 o'clock.
Well, we're drinking coffee at 4:30.
We did do that, though. We, in the Dean of Women's office, finally work out a schedule. I think that we probably were a little slow in realizing that this may be a problem or take additional time from the secretary's regular duties. And we were a little slow in working that out, but we have worked it out so that the person who's on duty in the morning in the office, not the secretary, but one of the staff, makes the coffee, and the one who is on in the afternoon cleans the pot. And rinses out any of the cups and things that have been left behind so that our secretaries don't have to now go through that process.
That's another good point, in fact, that people will not be so likely to leave their cups and things behind after they've had to do it because they think, if I wash out my cup. Whereas no one, it seems to, that doesn't seem to dawn on people when it's a secretary. Mm-hmm. It does on some people. But I think I was delighted to see their office do that because it was really kind of unusual to have an assistant running around saying, oh, I'm sorry, the coffee tastes so bad. I didn't have the coffee. Instead of having the secretary being told, the coffee tastes terrible.
Puts us in our place, I guess. There's another idea of that perhaps you may have felt, and that's that we've also touched on, and that's the matter of free speech in the office, or the idea that the secretaries can think that they may have particular feelings about something, and that the supervisor or boss is not very willing to allow that a secretary, who is also a woman, might have the ability to think something out and perhaps work something out that works better. Has that ever been a problem necessarily? No.
It isn't in a way for me. I developed a habit of having my crab sessions of talking things out about I would like to do it such and such way. And then we sit down and we figure out, can we do it? Is it within the budget? What is the reason why it cannot be done? If it's a good, solid reason, fine, I'll buy that. And so, as far as that, I think
just that one incident. Other people in the office, you know, we would sit down and talk about, okay, how are we going to do this?
Well, perhaps maybe we could just even take it on to personal feelings about things. If you have political ideas that differ from the boss, are you allowed to express those or make it known by wearing a button or you know, saying which candidate you're for?
I've never felt any problem as far as that was concerned. No, I've always felt perfectly free to express, except when I was a student teacher.
And teachers aren't supposed to think.
No, they're not supposed to have any political leaning.
I felt kind of a disappointment in me on a black armband. So I feel like in some offices you would get not to tell you to take it off or anything like that, but kind of a, I just can't believe.
Kind of a negative reinforcement to hide behind the partition.
I'm so disappointed in you.
And you naughty little kid, you time. So I'm sure it is quite there in some offices, depending on the office.
Yeah. I personally haven't had any problem, but
which, again, is where, you know, like, I feel like a secretary, back to this consciousness raising, as she changes and she grows within herself and she becomes aware of things and she sits down and she analyzes situations, if she's extremely unhappy, she says, okay, why? I think, you know, like there'll be more things that she'll become aware of. Perhaps we have never been aware of things that were actually there.
How long has it taken any of you to become aware of some of these currents that began to make you unhappy about being a secretary? I'm sure you didn't just come into your first job having all these feelings about your role and the role of the boss and everybody else.
I was a secretary in this one position for about a year and a half and was very happy there. And then my attitudes about a lot of things outside the office started changing. And as a result of that, I began to become dissatisfied in the office, but I wasn't aware of what was causing it. All I knew was that I was turning into a very, very unhappy person, and then I was turning into a very, very crabby person in the office. And then, you know, gradually it began to dawn on me that this was wrong, and this was wrong, and this was wrong, and they were taking this pattern.
We mustn't end on that note, because I feel like some of the things we've talked about in the secretarial situation would be the same in any kind of, I start to say menial, because I do not think secretary, but a job that maybe you didn't go into as a profession. Boy, that was the wrong word. But so many people go into secretarial jobs thinking this is a moving away from place, not a thing that you're planning to do for 25 years.
Okay. We have to quit. I'm sorry, we were just getting started. Thank you for listening in. We'd like to remind you to come by and visit the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center in the Dean of Women's Office, 220 Strong Hall. We hope you will be with us again next week. Thank you again.